comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. I'm rejoined this week by Emma Burnell. But before I let Emma speak and say hello, I'm going to totally and utterly abuse my position as host. Because last week I got to go and see Emma's fantastic play Triggered. And I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed. If you hadn't caught up with it, it's about a deselection process in the Labour Party. I would, as fair, Emma, you can tell me if I'm right, that a lot of your audience probably had sat through the type of meetings you depict in the play.
I think there's a certain amount of that, definitely.
Because there was a lot of knowing laughter I picked up.
It's very interesting. I've had people of all levels. So my best friend, who's not political at all, never been to a political meeting, has voted for all the parties, absolutely loves it. Mm-hmm. But I think there are jokes that she doesn't get, like the reference to Labour list and stuff.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
There are in jokes and there are broader jokes and stuff. So
yes,
yeah.
There was definitely some knowing laughter. I have to say, I thought the casting was brilliant. I thought the performances were brilliant. I thought your jokes were very funny, even the ones that were expense of the Lib Dems, because to be honest, they were a little bit too true. I was just thoroughly, thoroughly impressed that you'd sold out six shows again. I have to say, there was one moment of it actually that I found quite emotional, and that was when your voice sort of came around the theatre announcing the famous exit poll from the 2019 general election. And I found that quite emotional because you and I were sitting together at that moment.
We were.
Freezing cold tent in College Green.
So cold. Why do they do that on College Green? There's no need for it.
But, I mean, we could do a whole show on that. Yeah, all I will say is that Emma and I that night provided really excellent snacks to the rest of our broadcasting colleagues. But no, I did find that quite emotional because we'd spent that moment together. Seeing you depict it sort of took me back to that moment, and it rather stuck with me. So just huge, huge congratulations. I was thoroughly impressed. I could tell all those around me were thoroughly impressed. And
thank you so much. No, I mean, I've been so thrilled with the reception we've had. I mean, first selling out, then adding a matinee, then that selling out in 2 days. But then the reviews have been amazing. We've had lots of 4-star reviews, 1 5-star review. It just feels like I've achieved what I wanted to with it, which is, you know, both a good piece of, I mean, I would say so myself, a piece of writing which people have been receptive to,
yep.
Put it that way, rather than a good piece of writing that's a bit big-headed. But also, I really wanted to write something where the people in it weren't assholes about politics.
Yes, I wanted to just say that because we're going to discuss a lot of people that probably do come into that category today. And what you did so well is depict the human side of politics. And I think it's very easy when we're all going hammer and tongs to forget that. And yeah, it's really important.
Had people from all parties in, and that was the thing they all said, mm-hmm. was that, you know, we get that we fight you all the time, but, you know, that they were all human beings.
Yeah. On those very good reviews, I have to say you have probably achieved the one and only time I'll ever agree with anything in the Morning Star, which gave you a very nice review.
To get a 4-star review in the Morning Star. And I'm not a Blairite, but I think as far as they're concerned, I would be. So I was very happy with that.
And the other thing you managed to achieve was having me hum the red flag for most of the weekend. So well done. Thank you so much. But anyway, let's get to our... So again, very well done, but let's get to our first kind of very serious set of topics, the things we've got to unpack this week, because it's kind of been a quiet week in politics, but there's still quite interesting things been rumbling on. And the first one, please, in your head at this point, imagine the jungle drums from ITV, because I think we can only call this section "I'm a Tory MP, get me out of here." So Monday, the 5th of December, is in theory the deadline where Conservative MPs have to decide whether they're going to stand for re-election, we assume, in 2024 now. 12 at the time you and I are having this conversation have decided no thank you. There are some quite interesting and significant names in there. William Ragg up in Hazel Grove, which I know is a seat of great interest to the Lib Dems, is one of those that's gone. For me, the most interesting one, though, I don't know what you think about this, was Dahina Davison.
Yeah. She's only been in,
I think it's one term.
One term.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's perfectly reasonable to come in for one term, find that it's absolutely not for you and go, you know what, it's not for me. Nobody should be forced to be in any job longer than they wish to be. But it is extraordinary because, you know, obviously this is a very highly prized role. She would have fought tooth and nail to get there. So to have done such an immediate reversal is really very interesting.
There was a couple of... Yes, it is interesting. And it's interesting for a few reasons. One, you're quite right. She didn't really expect to get elected. She maybe hoped to get elected, but was in one of those seats, northern seats. Terribly, the name escapes me, but it was the only time.
Is she Portland?
That's correct. Thank you. Yes. And it's the only time, she's the only Conservative PR thing that's ever been there. Yeah. She is, I think she must have been, I think you and I found it thoroughly depressing on election night. She must have been 26 or 27 on election night when she was elected.
Something hideous like that. Yeah. Something
absolutely hideous. She's not even 30 yet. She's young, working class, northern, openly bisexual woman who really should be the future of a Conservative Party, of the centre-right party. And if she made the point that basically being in politics had meant she didn't have a normal 20s, and I totally, totally get that. I really understand feeling like that. I just think it's... If I was a Conservative, I would be considering that a terrible loss. I think she's on the junior ministerial ranks now.
Yeah.
And I just think if your party can't retain that level of talent, and she might, it's not one of those where she was guaranteed to lose the seat. It would, without doubt, be a very difficult fight to retain it, but certainly not a loss that was guaranteed. It was right, it's right on the border.
Yeah.
I just think an example like that is pretty depressing for a party.
Yeah, I mean, we did a Q&A after the play on the Wednesday, and I was asked, do you think Labour will win the next election? And I said, I do. And I, 6 months ago, there's no way I would have said that with any confidence, but there's just a stench of death about the Tories at the moment. And they're in a spiral, and I don't see them pulling themselves out of it. We're not going to have a good 2023. Nobody is good. We may come out of it. There may be a bit of post, if the economy bounces back a bit, which we can all hope it does, if the war in Ukraine ends, there might be a relief bounce. But actually, once parties go into this kind of death spiral, actually a relief bounce makes it easier in some ways to vote Labour. I mean, this is what happened in 97. You know, we had Black Wednesday, but by the time of the 97 election, the economy was on the up again. But actually, I remember someone who, a floating voter, saying to me, actually, that made me more confident that I could vote Labour. We can afford to now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that I can sort of see the logic pattern. I would say at this point, I don't want to go too... We'll do plenty of election predictions, I'm sure, over the coming weeks and months. I think it's not clear-cut Labour win. I certainly think it's a clear-cut big Labour win. If you put a gun to my head and made me put a bet on now, probably I would bet on Keir Starmer being the next Prime Minister in one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 6 months ago I would have said largest party. Now I think he's going to get a majority. I don't think he's going to get a majority of a Blairite style, but I think...
Or a Johnson AGC.
Yeah. But I do think just the way things are at the moment, it's stark.
It certainly feels like that. And I think, look, we have to put some of this in context. It's not just suddenly a load of Conservative MPs have had enough. I say... There is a deadline on Monday that, in theory, is when Conservative MPs are supposed to have told the party, you know, their local associations and Conservative headquarters, whether they're going to restand. I don't know. I truly don't know enough about the Conservative internal processes to know if that really means very much, you know. Like, if someone decided
to leave, I mean, as I understand it, like, it would be nice if they did that. It would help Tory HQ to plan. But I mean, the joy of Conservative individualism is they don't have to do the thing that's best for Conservative HQ. They do the thing that's best for them.
Yeah. And like, there's obviously a good bit of team spirit to give, your party the kind of best chance of picking a good candidate, and the local public getting to know, in the constituency getting to know that candidate, and so on and so forth. So I can see why the Conservatives have tried to push this deadline, and I think probably it has made this collection of MPs look like these people saying no happen a bit quicker than maybe they would have liked. You know, yeah. We might have had a bit of a slower drip if it wasn't such a deadline. But, you know, 12 MPs of various significance saying, do you know what, I actually can't do this for the next 5 years, I'm out. I think it does indicate something.
Yeah.
You know, as I say, there's a few of the examples where you're a bit like, oh, I'm a bit surprised about that. That doesn't look very good, that that person doesn't want to be involved anymore.
Chloe Smith's another one.
But, like, right, you know, a cabinet minister has been minister at various levels for a while. That's.
I mean, I get that she doesn't feel that she's going to get a cabinet ministry under Rishi Sunak, but, and there, I think part of the reason why people would not declare early is there's going to be at least one reshuffle probably between now and the next election.
Yeah, I think
why
that's
would
right.
you want to do yourself out of the potential of a ministerial salary and therefore a bigger pension?
Sure, and, you know, maybe, you know, doing some of the things you like, being on the front bench, get, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, you might try and hold off for as long as you can, and then post-reshuffle go, okay, this is really not going to happen to me. For me, thanks very much. All I can think of is the line from your play, which was the character who is an MP saying there's nothing, so X is an ex-MP, which we've heard before, but I think it's true in many cases. I think probably someone like Daheena Davison is going to go on and have a very nice media career, and fair play to her, which is probably more fun than being a 30-year-old MP.
Well, that's the other thing, is these 12 can openly job seek. Mm-hmm. The other 300 or so are just doing it privately over coffees.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, I saw when the kind of, I think that was happening like when the Lib Dems collapsed post-coalition, that people were suddenly really like, what on earth am I going to do next?
Yeah, but I mean, we both know coffees. Could we have a quiet coffee?
Yeah,
happening
yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
Lobbying firms all over Westminster right now.
Lobbying firms, think tanks, all sorts of associations. I'm sure that's right. And to be honest, you've got to look after yourself and your future and your family. And why would you not do that? I also think this is a good moment to point out actually that being an MP of whatever level, it's a really tough job.
It's a really tough job. It's an incredibly insecure job. All of them feel insecure all the time. And yeah, you work incredibly long hours and you're never off. You can't just nip into Sainsbury's on your weekend because, you know, you are the very visible face of the constituency. If it's
if you're doing a good job, the people in Sainsbury should recognise you.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're doing a good job during bad times, they'll recognise you and they'll all have a story they want to tell you. And you know, the idea that it's your off time won't occur to them.
Yeah. I mean, this makes me think of actually when I go to football, there are, I'm not going to give their names. There are multiple Conservative MPs that sit very, very close to me. A couple of you would recognise, a couple you might not. And I can see they're like, you know, as you say, they're never off. Like, if someone recognised them, someone might say something while sitting in the crowd. Like, you are never off. You're never off duty. You're always a bit on display.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It's a tiring, hard work job. I think it probably doesn't say something good about the future of the Conservative Party. These are not just grandees who have been there for 20 years handing over to the next generation, which you get at all elections in all parties, and that's fair enough. It does say something. I'd be a bit disturbed if I was Rishi Sunak or whoever his successor may be to be losing this. And the other issue, of course, is if you are someone that quite fancies being an MP. Is this the a Conservative MP? Is this the election you want to have a go in?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, how much new blood are they going to get? And that is always a huge problem.
Look, there are always people that want to be MPs.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is even these ones who are retiring, there's no guarantee that those seats remain Conservative.
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
So yeah, there will be some, there's always some new MPs for each party,
sure.
But the pool will be considerably smaller.
Yeah, and you know, you might not get the most talented people stepping forward this time to take on those seats. So I do think that is a thing to consider, because this might
and
be
this
the time.
This is how the Tories ended up with William Hague, who wasn't ready, first of all,
sure.
IDS, who was a disaster.
Yeah, it is going to be hard to attract the best talent to run, you know, in 2024. Well, sorry, while we're talking about Tory MPs standing down, we've got a bit of breaking news. I've just seen that former Health Secretary, former Chancellor, Sajid Javid has had enough. He's not going to stand again in the next election.
Well, 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 who'd have thought it? I thought he was going to be, you know, I thought he was a future leader in waiting.
I'm quite sure. I have to say, I'm quite sure.
Yeah. He really is now. We were talking about big beasts. He really is the biggest of the big beasts.
He's certainly the one, the biggest, kind of the most seniority that has decided they don't want to stand. Some of them are like quite significant backbenchers that are standing there. But, you know, who's someone who was a very, very senior and significant figure on the front bench to be standing down. And someone, as I understand it, who was very close to Rishi Sunak.
Yeah, because didn't they coordinate their resignations to bring Boris down?
Well, they claim they didn't, but
yeah, but
I assume they did.
I claim I'm 12 stone.
Like, I assume they did do that, you know, otherwise they were sort of telepathic and worked out
right
to perfection. But, you know, and there was that moment in Sunak's first Chancellor where he actually directly addressed Sajid Javid, who he had succeeded. I always assume they're very close. I mean, that doesn't mean you want to stay on as an MP. That is a pretty significant person
that
to lose.
That is very significant. What's his seat like? Where is it? I don't even know.
It's Bromsgrove, isn't it? I don't know enough about the demographics. I don't know if he could have held it. I guess it might be one of those seats, if you think about it, that, you know, someone well-known like him can hold, but perhaps a newbie candidate cannot.
Yeah, interesting. It's a very safe seat. Very safe, very safe. He got 63.4% of the vote at the last election. So he's not worried about losing his seat. He's just clearly had enough.
Yeah, and again, you don't know if that 60-odd percent can stay with a new candidate, a less high-profile person.
I mean, yeah, no, probably not. And probably not, you know, during an electoral squeeze. But I still don't think that's a seat that Labour are likely to win.
No, I think that's right. I do think that's right. You might have a very small, you know, someone get over the line with a smaller majority, but still get over the line. I do think the bigger picture is what that means for the Conservative Party if they can't retain those kind of people.
And I wonder, I mean, he was quite vocal, wasn't he, during the first leadership contest that he ran in. He tried to sort of push the Conservatives into doing certain things around things like Islamophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's part of his concern.
I don't know. We can't put words into that.
We have no idea. But
he's been strong.
Quite disappointed at several moments during his career, hasn't he? Like, yeah. When they tried to force him to have the joint spads with number 10.
Well, that was why he walked out of being Chancellor.
That's why he walked out. You know, he resigned again as Health Secretary once it became clear that needed to happen to bring Boris Johnson down. He's been very instrumental whilst not always being successful, which is an interesting role to play and balance to have struck.
Yeah, I think he's been deeply influential at key moments. He's been very, very strong talking out about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
He has, I think he didn't do a bad job as Health Secretary, you know, obviously did put a lot of work into that. Was around really for the vaccine rollout, wasn't he? And did, you know, whatever other criticism one might want to make. I think
he took over when our other discussee, Matt Hancock.
Yes, we don't know if he's going to happen to him in terms of re-selection. Oh. So that I think that would be
I mean, the thing about Hancock is his local party have made it fairly clear they don't want him back.
Yeah, they're pretty cross with him, aren't they? And I don't blame them at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, It's a lot anyway. Big breaking news.
I mean, if I were a Tory, that would worry me more even than things like Chloe Smith and Deanna Davidson. People.
Oh, what, losing Sajid Javid? Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
I think he's, you know, someone right at the top of their game who I thought had a lot more road in that game.
Yeah, I entirely agree. Anyway, yeah, so big breaking news on House of Commons. While we're talking about people standing down, let's briefly touch on the news that broke Thursday, the day before we recorded the show, that Ian Blackford has stepped down as the group leader of the SNP MPs in Westminster. You and I slightly made the same
interpretation.
You and I slightly made the same face. Whenever I watch a political event on the television, my cue to turn it off and go and do something else is normally when Ian Blackford starts talking.
He's such a windbag.
You said it, not me. But he has become, I think he's sort of become a parody of himself.
Yeah,
in that,
and I think he sort of leans into he's such a windbag. But I feel, I mean, his own side have had more than enough of him. There was more
it
than
does seem so, doesn't it?
His the guy who's going to take over him, whose name I've forgotten. Is it Adam Payne?
Okay, I didn't know we had an actually guaranteed takeover. I thought that was meant to be a bit of a process.
Well, from reading Politico this morning, what it sounds like is there's only going to be one candidate and he already had the votes that was definitely going to happen.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, we don't talk about the SNP that much. We may have to as they try and put increasing pressure to get another referendum on independence or try and turn an upcoming general election into a de facto referendum on independence. You know, they obviously recently suffered a rather significant defeat at the Supreme Court to that extent, which we didn't really dive into this show, but
highly expected.
Correct. But, you know, once a court says it, it matters.
Yeah.
And so I'll include a link to a story from that. So I don't think everything is clear cut for Sturgeon or her colleagues in Westminster as she might have liked to think a few months ago. I think it's getting
I think, again, the SNP have two problems. First of all...
Only two?
Well, two main... First of all, they do better when the Tories are doing well.
Okay, I can see that, because
they, particularly in Scotland, they can run against Westminster easier against a Tory government than a Labour government. Secondly, they have to keep dangling a referendum. Mm-hmm. They ever get one, they're completely screwed.
Oh, if they lose again, it's over.
A, if they lose again, it's over. But B, if they win again, if they win it, what the fuck are they going to do? Because they are useless at governing. I mean, their government of Scotland has been horrific. And the only reason they managed to keep it up is because they constantly keep it being about this constitutional balance question.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's been a very, very good smokescreen for a very long time. But I think people are starting to get tired of it.
Yeah, I think you may well be right. I think, if you look at the kind of issues around public services in Scotland, is not the type of thing that's sustainable for one party dominance for very long.
No.
We had a by-election yesterday. This, I don't blame our listeners if it escaped, you know, this rather...
It doesn't seem to. I mean, I suppose it was in the middle of a World Cup. And
It's the city. It was in the city of Chester. The Labour MP there, Christian Matheson, had to stand down for being a bit of a wrong'un.
As I understand it, yeah.
Right. The parliamentary watchdog recommended he be suspended for, and I'm quoting, I'm not saying this myself, serious sexual misconduct. Not a very nice story. Labour did hold it on, and by a pretty significant margin. They got over 61% of the vote yesterday, which is an increase. It's not a bad turnout. It was 41% turnout, which is not bad.
I was really surprised at the high turnout in this, in December, mid-term, reasonably safe seat. That's not bad at all.
No, not at all. So Labour got, as I say, over 60% of the vote. The Conservatives got 22.4% of the vote and no one else really mattered.
Yeah, it was the lowest result for the Tories in that seat since 1832. So
yeah, I have to say, when we switched on this morning, I was like, right, you know, by-election matters. We've got to talk about it. But please, Emma, convince me why I care about this. I'm still not convinced that I care that much.
And I don't think you should care about it the way the runoff in Georgia matters.
Right.
But it's just yet another indicator that I'm right about where we are politically.
Is that true, though? So say, like...
I mean, Labour retains a seat is not the story. The story,
yeah,
or any safe seat... or safe-ish seat. It's not that safe. It's been Labour since 2015. So Labour kept it through, you know, its really, really wobbly years. But we didn't, we hadn't held it before then. And there's always been a bit of a bellwether. Now its demographics are changing. So that's part of it. But it's, what matters is the swing, and the swing was big.
But
that's where by-elections can tell you a little bit about where we're at.
I mean, is that, like, that does often happen in midterm by-elections. You know, the Dems have snuck in on, got things in by-elections, then lost the seat.
This is where you're getting confused, and it's because you're a Lib Dem, and I get that. You basically live as a confused person. yes, Lib Dem victories do happen with big swings and then fall back.
Correct.
When there is a by-election between the two parties who will end up in government, one of whom will end up in government, it's a different sense of how you read them.
Maybe.
So I think it's more about the Labour Tory race. You know, the red car and the blue car had a race kind of result. Yeah. And there it very much is just a reaffirmation of the fact that we are looking at Labour being, you know, it says the polls are largely right.
Yes. So
and the polls are a snapshot, and the polls aren't saying this is what will happen in a 2 years' time. It's saying this is where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree that if there were a general election tomorrow, we know who's winning it. It's a 12% swing from the Conservatives, and I'm not going to ever disagree with Professor Sir John Curtis. He said basically, if that swing was repeated nationally, Labour would win a small majority, and that is correct.
Which is where we both said we think we are.
Yeah, that sort of feels about right. And, you know, there was a Conservative peer called Lord Hayward, who is also an elections analyst. He put it as generally as expected, no shocks, but definite satisfaction for the Labour Party. And I think that's where I am.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. And that, again, as I say, it's not earth shattering. It's not Hayward and Middleton or the other one. But it is. It's just another data point that says, yes, we can be increasingly confident about our analysis of where we're at.
There is another interesting point I want to just pick up, and then we actually need to return to our first topic because we sort of missed something that we should pick up on. But the Conservatives have not done very well in by-elections recently. Now, some of that does always happen when you're in government. People use that as a chance to be a bit irritated at the government. Yeah, and that doesn't mean they won't, by the time the next general election, go back to voting for the Conservative Party or whichever party is at that point in power. But I don't want to read too much into this, but does that tell us something about the Conservative election machine, that they kind of just can't get over the line in these seats anymore? Am I overstating the case?
I think there's a bigger indicator that the Conservative CCHQ is in trouble at the moment, and that is they're going hard on Labour's plan to put VAT on private schools. It feels like the Tories aren't focus grouping shit. They aren't actually talking to the voters. There's a sense that they think the people who use private schools are the same people who used them in the 90s, which is why Tony Blair was so frightened of it, but that's just not true. Because of the increase in value in state schools and because of the massive overinflation increases in the cost of private schools, that segment of the middle class who once sent their kids to private schools are now just moving to the areas where the good schools are and sending their kids to good state schools and putting the money into the house rather than into the education. And so the idea that it's an aspirational attack is just wrong now. It just doesn't bear out in any of the numbers, any of the statistics. And so it feels to me like the Tories are, they don't seem to have a machine that understands the current electorate. and where they can and should be making attacks. And so,
do you think that applies in like local by-elections?
Well, no, this is why I'm saying this is a different indicator of why I think that the machine is in trouble. So I think the machine is in trouble in various ways. For me, the bigger indicator is this more national picture one where they're just doing the wrong messaging. But clearly, yes, they're also not able to churn out boots on the ground in the way, you know, do they have a big active youth contingent? I'm not sure that they do anymore. Mm. And that was a big, big part of, you know, their boots on the ground strategy in previous elections.
Sure, as it is for all political parties, if you get the young uns out, that does matter quite a lot. Boris Johnson, when he was MP, was Prime Minister, lost, a couple of by-elections, Tiverton and Honiton to the Lib Dems, which was a very, very big swing and a really bad moment for Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Wakefield went to Labour. Both really bad moments for the Conservatives for different reasons.
Yeah.
Because it, but he's standing to be an MP again. We were talking about the people that are standing down.
Yeah.
At this moment, as we said, we're not entirely sure how strict that December the 5th deadline is, but he has said for the moment he is standing again to be the MP for Uxbridge.
As I understand it, the seat of Uxbridge, he has something like a 6,000 majority.
Yeah, it was like...
It was increased. So it was cut down significantly to be quite tight in 2017. And then it increased in 2019. And the boundary changes have been quite generous to Boris in terms of the increasing the Tory likelihood in that seat. So I think it's perfectly possible that he does keep that seat. The demographics are changing. The London donut strategy is no longer... an appropriate one for the Tories because they've basically forced everyone out of central London.
On which he won the mayoralty.
Yeah, but he wouldn't now because actually that zone three to six buffer zone that the Tories used to have is now full of people who can no longer afford.
We're not going to explain tube zones to non-London listeners, are we?
Basically, anything outside the ring road used to be solid Tory.
Yep.
Because it's that space between the home counties and London that you could live in happy, comfortable commuterville. And it was high level commuters who were coming into work in the city, things like that. Now it's
and it
not,
got Boris Johnson over the line.
And it got Boris Johnson over the line in 2008. Now it's very different. It's people who grew up in, you know, lefty liberal people who grew up in Hackney, Islington, places like that, Camden, who simply cannot afford to live in central London anymore. Their wages are too low. Public sector workers who just can't afford to live.
Or
where
they've done rather nicely and are happy to move out.
All that, but they've retained their, you know,
their politics,
tradition
yeah.
was you would then go more right wing, but that hasn't happened. Partly because of things like Brexit. So they might be more sort of centrist economically, but they feel that the Tories have gone extreme. So that kind of strategy, that those demographics have changed. I don't know, and I'm fairly sure, I think that Boris Johnson is a lot less trouble than Ian Duncan Smith is, for example.
Okay, that will be interesting to see on election night. Maybe we'll be sitting out in the cold.
Maybe we'll be freezing our tits off.
We'll have to,
In the summer, it's bloody cold by that time of night.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely need some tea and a bit of a... Look, I'm not afraid to admit that Emma and I had to penguin a little bit. I'm not afraid to admit that on air.
I'm proud.
If anything, I'm proud, exactly. But yeah, so you think Boris Johnson can hold the seat?
I think he can hold the seat. If I were the Tories, I would want Boris Johnson to bugger off.
I think I agree with you, actually. I think...
More trouble on the back benches plotting than he is going off and earning a fortune writing columns and
speaking
after dinner speaking and what have you.
I agree with that. I also think, like we talked about, we're not convinced how tight that deadline is. You said before we got the show, you think he's a bit Trumpy, that he won't want to put himself in a position that he'll lose.
Yeah.
Quote. And also, I think we should add to that again, because he's already lost being Prime Minister. I agree with that. I think if in a year's time he starts seeing polling and reaction on the ground that is not indicating that he is going to do very well, or that it's going to be much tighter than he ever wants to play with, I think we might find, you know, that he says, thanks very much, I'm going to leave it for a new, I've had my time.
He'll go and work with Elon Musk.
Or some, you know, I think probably go and have nice dinners and speak after them and write nice columns and maybe finish his Winston Churchill book finally. Something like that is more
likely.
Has
the Shakespeare book ever happened?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, so I think that's all. I said it was a quiet week. We've got through quite a lot. But we've got good news. I think I'm hoping as we get closer to Christmas, everyone calms down a bit.
Yes, please God. I think we've had too many years where that didn't happen. I feel like this year, if Rishi Sunak gives us nothing else, I mean, okay, we're going to have a lot of strikes between now and Christmas, so that's a thing. But in terms of what's happening in actual Parliament, I'm really hoping that it's just a bit boring.
Yes, please, for a nice, boring Christmas where I can just eat mince pies in peace. Emma, so lovely to have you back. Remind people where they can keep up to date with all your everything that's going on.
Well, while it's still up and running, I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_, and I have a Substack called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
Yes, and you did a piece on that about the Conservative MPs walking away, didn't you?
I did, which I called I'm a Tory, get me out of here. Yes.
So and I will link to that in the show notes. We didn't even discuss if Matt Hancock is going to get the Conservative whip back or come back and keep to hold his seat. Maybe we'll have to do that another day. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. My Substack is called The Addition. Again, all that stuff is in the show notes. Love to see you again, Emma. We'll be back next week.